Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
We strongly advise that only services and businesses that are essential stay open: grocery stores, gas stations, pharmacies, medical facilities.
That's New York Governor Andrew Cuomo today ordering a ban on all gatherings of 50 or more people in New York State to help stop the spread of the coronavirus. But you don't have to go to New York to hear that kind of language. Connecticut, New Jersey, Maryland, and D.C. and many other states doing the same. Store shelves empty, schools closed. And this is still just the beginning of this crisis. So how do we deal with the stress, the anxiety, the worry? Well, we're going to help you walk through this tonight. My guest is Dr. Thomas Mellman, psychiatrist and director for the Howard University Center for Clinical and Translational Research and Stress Sleep Studies. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you are worried about this coronavirus situation, if you're stressed out, if you're feeling a bit of anxiety or a lot of anxiety, or perhaps even if you are not, I really want to hear from you to find out how you are addressing it in your head and in your heart, in your spirit. Again, give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Mellman, good to talk to you again. How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Fisher. I'm well. I hope you are, too.
I'm doing okay. I am. I'm doing okay. Little concerned. I'm going to be honest, transparent about the whole thing. I'm concerned about this.
We're all concerned. And before we get calls, perhaps I could make a few introductory comments. I see, as I think about it now, three major sources of worry and anxiety. The most obvious one, of course, is the risk of catching the coronavirus infection. And, you know, that's worrisome. But in addition, now that we're taking necessary measures such as the ones that Dr. Frederick outlined, there's a disruption to routine and social connections, and those are important to people too. And then finally, you know, we need to be attentive to the fact that these measures are very disruptive to people's economic health. There are a lot of people who whose income depends on restaurant, bar, other kinds of work that is going to be suspended for the time being. So there's much out there to worry about. You know, regarding the first, if we do what we're supposed to do, the risk to an individual is actually low. Now, whether those numbers are reassuring to people, I mean, you hear about people being infected in the thousands and deaths in the hundreds in this country and, you know, much higher in the world count, that's scary. And perhaps even knowing that there's a small percent of risk to an individual is scary also. But that perhaps is the less worrisome focus, as well as a motivation to do what we're supposed to be doing in terms of hygiene and social distancing. But we can't ignore the loss of routine and social connection, too. And I think one way to deal with that is, under the circumstances that we're in now and their uncertain duration, is to form new routines and to maintain social connections, you know, within your home and through telephone and electronic contact and so forth.
Yeah.
And I hope that our society provides resources to those who will be economically threatened during this time.
You know, one of the things that was, I would say, really profound, and it was something that Governor Hogan said last week during one of his initial press conferences, and you've heard other governors and politicians, as they've tried to address this, they've said over again, this isn't changing day by day. It's not changing minute or hour by hour. It is changing sometimes minute by minute. And how we handle the ongoing news to keep people informed about where you should or should not go, what you should or should not do. How do you handle that onslaught of information?
That's a very good question and point. And indeed, things are rapidly changing, and we're hearing different messages and recommendations from our leadership as it goes on. But I think there's also a risk in being completely preoccupied with the news. It's very important to stay informed. Both for one's physical health safety as well as, not knowledge is helps us control our situation. But I think we also need to try to avoid obsessive preoccupation and compulsive listening to news. Even though things do change, the basic message for social isolation and for learning institutions to move to distance learning and, things being canceled. I think those trends are pretty apparent right now. So I suggest that people both listen and be attentive, but also take a break from the news and do things that help them relax, whether it's meditation, prayer, exercise, conversations with friends, all of the above. It's important to maintain that as well while staying informed, but hopefully not preoccupied to the point that it just causes anxiety to surge. The point of healthy anxiety is to motivate action, but severe worrisome preoccupation can immobilize a person, and it's not healthy.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about dealing with the COVID-19 stress, anxiety that has come up as we enter into a difficult, brave new way of conducting ourselves as we try to figure this coronavirus situation out. If you have a comment or a question, give me a call. I want to know how you're doing with this. Nakisha calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Nakisha. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was calling because I'm an Uber and Lyft driver, and we're taking a big hit on what's going on right now because nobody is going anywhere. So it's like it's really affecting us, and nobody, but they do the press conferences on TV and all that. Nobody's saying how they're going to help Lyft or Uber drivers. Are they going to pass a bill to help us? And I also, I lease my car through a leasing company doing Uber and Lyft, and this is all I have. And the where I lease my car at, they're even threatening me, saying that they'll take my car if I don't make my payment. But what am I supposed to do? And nobody's talking about Lyft or Uber drivers and how it's affecting us. And I want to know, like, what is the plan with that? Like, did anybody come up with anything? Anybody got any answers?
Well, I will say this, Nakisha, and this is in reference not just to Uber drivers, but, hourly workers and the like. I will say that what we have seen is the House and the Senate acting with what would be considered lightning speed as they attempt to address some of these, some of these issues. But I also think that to your point, whoever you're leasing your car through, and this isn't just about cars. This is about mortgages. This is about credit cards. Check your email. Check the company. See what they're saying about that. Because in some cases, as we've heard, Sometimes mortgage payments can be moved. Sometimes car payments or lease payments can be moved. Credit card adjustments may be made. And what you don't hear today, you may start hearing tomorrow. I remember last Friday when we were discussing this, and there was a caller who was very concerned about Metro and the fact that that caller was not aware that Metro was indeed beginning to make changes. More changes were announced today. So, you may want to look specifically at some of the areas as it relates to your car lease. That company may be doing something. And if they don't, call them. And that may help to reduce some of those anxieties. Dr. Melman, you can certainly speak more broadly about this issue because a lot of folks are concerned about it.
No, I agree, Mr. Fisher. I think your advice is right on. And, you know, I'm sorry when I was talking about, groups of people who are economically affected by this. I wasn't being comprehensive. Certainly, drivers like yourself, it's a very challenging situation. So I totally agree with paying attention to what's out there, but also, as Mr. Fisher added, to be proactive. It's always helpful to be proactive and to express the hardship that this situation creates to your creditor. Yeah. And I think in many, many instances, there will be flexibility. But that's not to, deny that this presents a real hardship.
Nikisha, thank you so much. And hang in there. Good luck to you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about concerns, worry, anxiety, stress brought on by the coronavirus. If you have a question or if you have a comment as to how to handle those stresses, give me a call. Lauren calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening.
Hi.
So like the first caller, I am a Lyft driver as well. I just jumped in my car with my gloves on, and I got my wipes and my spray, and I'm just going.
Mm-hmm.
I can't sit at home spraying Lysol for the rest of my life, so I just figured everyone else got to go to work, so I'm going to take them.
Let me ask you something, Lauren, and this is specifically to car share businesses and the like. I'm sure you've seen a reduction in business already.
So I'm just coming in, and I mean, I've been out for like a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to have to go back out, which is not typical. I normally make what I need to do within the hours that I do, but I mean, I understand the circumstances and the path that I chose in being a Lyft driver full time. So I'll accept the responsibility and do what I need to do.
Are you, while you may see a reduction, I'm assuming you've not seen a stop in that business, per se. There are customers
today,
out there.
Yes, there are customers out there. It always varies from day to day. Even on a normal day, it always varies from day to day. So, like, sometimes I normally typically do about 5 hours a day. I don't need as much as most people. Like, I own my own car, so I have a different quota than most people. It's probably a lot lower than what most do when they're full time. So I typically, I'm out for 5 hours. I get everything done where I need to do when I'm back in the house.
How are you feeling about this as life has begun to change?
I think the most annoying thing, honestly, is shopping.
Mm-hmm.
I can't restock up on my Lysol. I have enough disinfectant wipes to at least the end of the year, at least, but I mean, I can't get what I need to get to go to. I do also do other shares of Postmates and Shipt and stuff like that. I will say I don't feel comfortable doing that right now.
I see.
So I specifically chose just to solely do Lyft for this time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the fact that I can control how many people are in my car and the fact that I can disinfect my whole car and I know it is disinfected.
Lauren,
going to
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your positive attitude. Hang in there. And thank you so much for your phone call.
Yeah.
Go ahead, real quick. I've got to take a break, but go right ahead, Dr. Melman.
Yeah, I'll just interject that you and the previous caller are providing a very important service. People still need to get places, even though more of us are staying at home. And it sounds like you're doing it very responsibly. So yeah. Thank you, both of you.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about anxiety and concern that has been prompted by the coronavirus crisis. Lines are open. Want to hear from you. How are you dealing with it? We'll talk to you next, including Renee calling from Virginia. Don't hang up. You will be able to hear the program. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in about 15 seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about your concerns, your worries, your anxiety prompted by the COVID-19, the coronavirus crisis. If you are trying to deal with some anxiety, some worries and the like, give us a call. I want to hear how you're trying to deal with that. Of course, we have with us Dr. Thomas Mellman. He is a psychiatrist and the director for the Howard University Center for Clinical and Translational Research, as well as the Stress Sleep Study Department. I want to talk to you, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Mellman, before I go back to the phone lines, one of the things that we've seen right now is that the coronavirus has really been problematic and in some cases deadly for our seniors, our senior citizens. What do you have to tell them about dealing with their worries and their concerns?
Well, there's a lot of stress associated with aging, and the threat is real. So people need to, the elderly need to take precautions, and people working with the elderly or living with the elderly, with older Americans, older adults, need to adhere to the hygiene rules and that are being promoted. It's, you know, infection has a higher risk among older adults, but many will recover who were infected, and with the proper measures, the vast majority will be protected from potential infection. So I don't know that my fundamental advice differs between older adults and younger people, because you know, there's a need to be informed and to take appropriate measures, and like with everyone else, undue preoccupation is harmful in and of itself.
Yeah.
And people need to, you know, have their pleasure and their distractions and their social interactions, as long as they're in a safe context.
I want to go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I'll take your phone calls as they become available. Renee calling from Virginia. Thanks for hanging on, Renee. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just wanted to just make a comment that I am overwhelmed of all the news. I mean, I can't turn anything on. Corona this and Corona that, but the news, the information that I am given is I'm grateful for, because it allows me to be aware. aware, have more awareness of myself and my contact of where I go, where I come from, so that I can be safe for myself and for the rest of my family that I come in contact with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad and grateful for the being overwhelmed, but it does cause not an anxiety, but it does cause kind of like, oh, please, again.
Yeah.
So to speak.
How are you trying to address that, again, feeling, Renee?
I address it by just listening to the points, so to speak, eat the meat and spit out the bones. What I've already heard, I will, you know, take that in. But whatever what's new, I will pay attention to that and be able to, act accordingly. Because, you know, I travel a lot. I drive a lot. Mm-hmm. I drive from Maryland to go visit my cousin to take care of them. And they're in their 80s, so they're elderly. And so I have to be able to pay attention and make sure that I don't come in contact with anything to bring to them. And then I go home to my family, my children, who are young. So I make sure I pay attention to that.
Okay.
So I'm always trying to be able to make sure I get the right information.
Okay.
You know, in within. So all the information that's coming is great.
Renee, thank you again, and thank you for hanging in there, and certainly keep your ear to the ground, and certainly stay informed. I appreciate your phone call. Let me go to Margretta, calling from Baltimore. Margretta, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening, and I just wanted to say I'm so appreciative and very grateful for the balanced approach to what's going on now that you all are offering. And it's very refreshing for me because a lot of times I talk with people and it's really about their doom and gloom and fear. And so many people are functioning out of that energy of fear. And I'm a member of a community that's unique in that I'm totally blind. And so a lot of the rapidly changing information is not as accessible to me as it may be to the sighted community. And so most of the things that I hear about is really addressing the larger part of the society, and it seems not to pause and take notice and sort of provide information that would be specific to my community.
Well, and, you seem, Margretta, to be handling this situation, a disability or no, with a bit of grace. How are you feeling?
Well, I'm fortunate in that quite a few years ago, I decided that I wanted to examine what well-being is really all about and reach for what that's about, as opposed to continuing to avoid things that may be harmful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't willing to continue to react to information and the fear. And so I've been practicing moving in that manner and paying attention to how I feel,
mm-hmm.
doing things that seem to uplift me, not only physically, but spiritually. And so I try to take in the things that are helpful for that, and I go by how it feels to me. And that includes information
right.
and conversation.
Okay.
Let me
see what Dr. Melman has to say about that, because I find that really interesting and a really important point. Dr. Melman?
Sure. It sounds like the adversity you've been coping with has given you a very framework that's helpful now. And I want to underscore what you said about not avoiding difficult news. Avoidance strengthens the worrisome thoughts, and you take them in, you accept, you process it, and decide what plan of action is appropriate. And I think that's a great model for our other listeners.
Yeah. Margaretta, thank you so much for your uplifting spirit for those who may be struggling with some anxiety. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me ask you before I go back to the phone lines, Dr. Melman, what might be the sign that you are feeling anxiety related to the coronavirus threat crisis situation?
So a healthy anxiety level would spur us to action and to attend to what we need to attend to be informed. An unhealthy level of anxiety can paralyze an individual from taking any action. And you've probably heard me say this before, but I think sleep is an important, is both important to counter stress and to promote health, but it's also an important barometer of how a person is coping.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, you know, if you're sitting up in bed worrying about things rather than sleeping, I think that's also a sign that it's gone too far. And as a first step, I would advocate for, you know, people to turn off the news before they wind down and try to go to sleep and do something relaxing and pleasantly distracting.
Mm-hmm. I want to drill down a little bit more on that relaxation, pleasantly distracting situation, but I do want to go back to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Janine calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Janine, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go right ahead.
My concern is that I work in the healthcare field in a nursing home, and it is stressful on a daily basis as we get daily updates about what's going on and the different rules and how we need to handle the situation. I'm one of the non-essential employees, and my main concern is I'm still required to be at work, even though daily we're hearing different things, how things are being closed down, but the job is still requiring us to still be there. And I have a concern about my health as well. So that's something that's stressful to me, is even though you're required to be at work, when a lot of things are, a lot of jobs are saying, if you can work from home, work from home, because of the health scare.
Hmm. That, you know, and that's another one of those really difficult work situations where this has caused a lot of discomfort for a lot of people, Dr. Melvin.
Yes, it's... It's a disparity that some people are able to work from home and others are not permitted to. And it raises, you know, questions about fairness and the risk. But, you know, I can't speak to the specifics of your job and the requirements, but I, you know, it sounds like you're on the front line, so to speak, working with the elderly in a healthcare facility. So if you are working, please take all the recommended precautions. And I consider people working in your settings to be heroes at this time.
It's really interesting that you say that. I saw something on social media today, photographs of nurses who were literally, you know, sleeping at their desks, taking, you know, these power naps so they could keep going. Yeah. And these healthcare workers are, they really are the heroes. But, you know, as they often say, Dr. Melman, and I'll say this to Janine too, if in any way, shape or form you begin to feel physically ill, then you've got to not only protect yourself, but also protect the people that you are serving by isolating yourself, you know, self-quarantining. Because, as you said, Dr. Melman, those are the kinds of things that you really have to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. Very important point.
Yeah. Janine, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to go back to the sleep issue. Certainly, that is your wheelhouse, where you talked about doing something that is relaxing and the like for people who are losing sleep over the COVID-19 situation. Can you kind of give me a list of the kinds of things that people should try to do to relax prior to going to bed at night and while we're dealing with this?
Well, it's going to vary from person to person as far as what works best for them. But sleep is a passive activity that requires a relaxed state of mind. And it's very hard to go right from stressful news to nodding off. And I recommend that people do not bring their laptops or TVs into the bedroom, if that's possible, to shut them off, to engage in something pleasant and relaxing, be it non-heated conversations, watching something before going to bed that's, that's not upsetting. There's very little TV left that is not upsetting, but you can find something. Conversation, reading, and waiting for that feeling of relaxation and sleepiness, the wave of tiredness to come over a person, and then get under the covers and turn off the lights and hopefully, and try to maintain pleasant thoughts and images. And if that doesn't work, 15, 20 minutes, you're getting more aroused and frustrated and worried. Get out of bed. Do something else. Distract yourself. Sleep is one of those activities that the harder you try, the worse it is. You just kind of got to allow sleep to come. So, if it's not working, distract yourself. Let the waves of tiredness come back and get back in bed.
One of the things that, and this may be kind of an upside of this for people who may be used to exercising and now the gyms are closed. Okay. But with the weather warming up and keeping social distance and the like, there are parks, for example, where you could possibly go, to exercise, take a brisk walk, jog, if that's what you do. And I think, exercise can often go a long way to relieving stress, and that Absolutely. May be one of the few things that people can do outside of their home where they don't have to worry about great social distance.
Right, right. There's nothing saying that you can't be outside, and the weather is improving, which may be a good thing for the pandemic as well. But exercise is one of the great stress relievers and health promoting activities. And those of you who are used to going to the gym, adapt your routine. There are lots of things you can do in your home or outside of your home, as you suggest. And, don't do it an hour before your intended bedtime, but exercises, I took a nice bike ride myself today, felt much more energized mm-hmm. after the fact. So I think that's a very important thing to emphasize.
Go ahead, please.
Activity and exposure to the sunlight during the day helps a person sleep at night as well.
I wanted to ask about something also that the our elected officials have mentioned, and as I started to mention at the top of the program, which has concerned me. We're talking about stress and anxiety over this. There are some people who are not stressed out about this at all. There is no anxiety. Not only is there no stress, there's no anxiety. There is no concern at all, which is why we've seen, for example, in New York, Connecticut, Maryland and in D.C. and even, Governor Larry Hogan and D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser mentioned these issues. In their press conference today, where people were not abiding by some of the recommendations that came down via executive order. And so now it's kind of like, well, if you don't do what I ask, then you need to do what I'm told, what you're told. And I think that kind of thing may cause other people stress to see people just hanging in the clubs, going to the bars and things like that. Should that be of a concern as well?
Well, it's not good. It's they're in some kind of denial, and it is an antisocial thing to be doing right now. You not only put yourself at risk, you put the community at risk. And I often preface discussions about anxiety that anxiety per se is not a bad thing. It's a ubiquitous human emotion that causes us to pay attention to things that are a threat and to mobilize to action if that's helpful. And, most of this discussion has been about managing and keeping the anxiety within certain bounds. But the absence of anxiety is problematic, and it's unfortunate that these individuals sort of trigger reactions that feel oppressive to many of us. But it can be human nature to ignore a threat, to go surfing in a hurricane and that sort of thing. And it's not what I consider healthy. And in this case, it's not just posing a risk to the individual, but to their community as well.
When you specifically speak about dealing with some of these stresses, and you said sometimes anxiety can be a good thing, what is the tipping point for anxiety not being a good thing? And what if you do feel an anxiety attack or something just below that and you want to address it? How should you do that?
Sure. Yeah, I think some of my comments before addressed when anxiety is becoming overwhelming, when it paralyzes a person to action as opposed to motivating them to do the appropriate thing, when it interferes with sleeping, and when it's sudden, severe, and overwhelming, which can lead to a paralyzing state of mind, such as a panic attack. There are people, it's not uncommon, who experience panic attacks, both during an epidemic and at other times. And there are very effective treatments for panic disorder, as well as generalized anxiety. There is a role for medication in the general treatment of these conditions, and also potentially in the exacerbation of anxiety that can occur during a crisis time like this, to help people sleep and to enable them to come down from a severe state of anxiety. But in the majority of individuals, consciously managing the anxiety in the ways we've discussed, not allowing yourself to just get worried and more agitated in bed instead of relaxing and falling asleep, exercise, as you brought up, meditation, pleasant distractions, social connections, all can serve to help manage excessive, but shall we say, normal and potentially healthy anxiety.
One of the things that came up yesterday, particularly in Maryland, is that so many of the popular houses of worship essentially shut down. They were streaming their worship services. Now, certainly they do that anyway. But there are some people for whom Bedside Baptist is not enough, for example, and they do want to go to fellowship, to worship, in a corporate setting. And I saw several videos, including at my church, where these houses of worship were virtually empty. You know, how can someone deal with, you know, when all else fails, a lot of people, you know, turn to their faith. But if they can't go to church, or they can't go to the synagogue or to a mosque or wherever they go, that may leave them wanting and again, dealing with anxiety issues.
Sure. I realized that the communal feeling and the gathering and the being together is a very important part of worship that's very reassuring to people. And, you know, now there's necessary limitations on that, and I would advise people to be open to the online variants that are becoming more and more prominent. I would argue, too, that it's not the same, but it's pretty good. And, you know, I'm sure, I don't want to stereotype older individuals, but as being more averse to online communication. But it, you know, we should take advantage of the technology we have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, experience fellowship however we can. And then, you know, some degree of study and gathering may still be going on, and then hopefully it won't be too long before it resumes again, and I'm sure people will really appreciate that, perhaps more than they ever did. But do take advantage of, you know, the online forums and the stream services and the various ways we can communicate even at a time like this. And you know, even if that's not been your, you know, your modality in the past, try it now.
Are you concerned about those people who may be self-medicating in order to move through this? You know, particularly people who may live alone, or you know, people who may already be teetering on the precipice of substance abuse, and then the added issue of the anxiety and concern may threaten to tip them over. What should those people do when they may perhaps recognize that there may be an issue?
Sure. Well, alcohol misuse and misuse of illicit drugs as well as prescribed medications is already a prominent problem in our society, one that's, you know, getting more recognition. And certainly this could be, what's going on could be a factor to push people, you know, over the threshold of problematic use. And I think people just need to monitor that to, you know, allow others to know what's going on and to find other stress-relieving measures. Mm-hmm. But this is a problem, a significant problem in our society, and the current circumstances, as you suggest them, are only going to exacerbate that. But, you know, it is the case that I think there are more treatment opportunities, and certainly Howard University is doing a lot to increase access to drug and alcohol use disorder interventions.
I only have about a minute or so left. Do you have any final thoughts or advice for those who are just stressing out over this?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show again. It's always informative. You have very thoughtful perspectives, as do the callers. And, you know, my final message, I guess, is that we're all in this together, and perhaps there's some strength and healing in that, that it's not just you, it's not just me, it's not just one of the callers, but we're all dealing with this, and this is an opportunity for our communities to come together and do things that are helpful, and we'll get through this. We don't know the exact time frame, but there will be an end to this epidemic, and there may be others in the future, of course. But we'll have learned a lot. We'll have learned a lot about our coping. And let's be supportive to each other.
Well said. And about the old folks and faith, I'm sure that right along through here, people of all ages are reevaluating their faith perspectives as the days go on. But Dr. Thomas Mellman, I really appreciate your expertise and your insight. Thank you so much for talking to us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, March 16th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.